listening to another Netcast production brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters at fancypantsgangsters.com. Because those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet.
Welcome to Blogulator Radio. My name is Chris. This is officially episode number 5 of the Netcast version of the Blogulator.com via Fancy Pants Gangsters Network, focusing on the tedium medium. See what I did there, Doctor? Television. That's Dr. Peace's laugh here in the background. Once again, joining me all the way from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. How are you, Doctor?
I'm doing good. I just want to dedicate this podcast to Cameron Richardson before we start also.
Oh, that's a good touch. I should really be dedicating and writing a lot more about my celebrity cush now that you have been doing so much on theblogulator.com. But would you read another post about my obsession with Jodie Foster?
Oh, yes. Okay. I'd do more than read it.
I'll plan on
that.
That
means.
Go to blogulator.com, click on Dr. Peace, and you'll see some lovely exposition. Exposition? No, that's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's right.
Exposition on who exactly Cameron Richardson is, for those of you that are so unlucky of not to be in the know. Oh, I meant to tell you, Dr. Peace, I saw Cameron Richardson in a recent episode of House. Have you seen that?
I have seen that one, the one where she's actually like the perfect male female. Something.
Yes. Yes. Spoiler alert, but yeah, turns out she's a hermaphrodite who has sex with her father. So
yep.
It was like a Law and Order SVU episode, but with House screaming at her.
And like
her.
A wonderful dream.
In the wonderful dream, yeah. Would you still date her if she was a hermaphrodite?
I would only date her if she were a hermaphrodite.
Good to know. All right.
Yeah.
So she might have some work to do before she she dates Dr. Peace. She's also married or something, right?
She has a kid. I don't think she's married, though.
Oh.
I don't know who the dad is.
It's probably you.
I would like to remember that.
Speaking of once thought of celebrities, she's from Harper's Island on CBS, if anybody remembers that from last summer. It's one of my guilty pleasures.
Cal! Cal, I'm in here!
I think it might be 2 summers ago now.
Is it 2 summers ago?
I think so.
We are getting too old, Doctor.
I know, when Harper's Island is becoming retro.
Oh, man. Two of the other actors on that show are right now on AMC's The Killing. Have you seen that at all?
I have not.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
I've been watching Twin Peaks instead.
Oh, are you watching it for the first time?
I got all the way up to the reveal the first time I watched, and then whoever put it on the internet where I was watching it decided to edit the last few episodes only to the parts he liked, so I decided to wait.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. So are you watching it now from the reveal of Laura Palmer's killer?
I am. I have about 5 episodes left, I think.
Nice, yeah. It gets pretty weird, but if you stick it out to the end, the last episode is pretty amazing.
That's what I heard. That's why I went back to finish.
Cool, cool. Well, enough about TV shows that actually exist. we're going to talk now about TV shows in development / TV shows we wish or could easily see be in development. We're going to do a little version of Two Truths and a Lie. If you ever played this, my social studies teacher did this in middle school. You didn't have Mr. Craning back at Elmbrook Middle School, did you, Doctor?
No, never heard of him.
He was pretty awesome. We did Two Truths and a Lie, in which he gave us artifacts from the past, and we had to give 3 reasons, you know, why it existed or what it was for, and convince the class which one that our lie that we came up with was the true one.
The Rosetta Stone. That's my answer.
You were correct, actually.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is there's plenty of shows in development that we have yet to talk about here on Blogulator Radio. I chose 2, Doctor chose 2, and we also came up with our own fake one. And so I'm going to present to Doctor first my 3 shows, and he's got to decide of the 3 which one is the lie, which one is actually not in development. You ready, Doctor?
I am ready. Let's do this.
Okay. So first, I've got a show that's coming up on Showtime, and it's featuring Kristen Bell in the lead role and Don Cheadle in a supporting one. It's a subversive, scathing look at a self-loathing management consultant from a top-tier firm. Bell will play an Ivy League graduate opposite Cheadle's character, a cutthroat consultant willing to do whatever it takes for his clients. That's number 1. Number 2.
Should I wait till the end to respond?
Yeah, wait till the end, I say. So, okay. So you take it all in.
Got it.
All right, that's show number 1. Number 2, Evan Rachel Wood portrays a young starlet whose career has gone downhill after one too many run-ins with the law and the paparazzi. Created by Liz Tigler of Life Unexpected and The Riches, this pilot was also originally slated to be produced for the CW, but now it's set to go to Starz. The hour-long dramedy co-stars Jean Triplehorn in her first post-Big Love role as the starlet's stage mother, while Dina Loewen is already set for a meta cameo in the pilot's opening scene.
All right.
And here's number three. It is a show in production for HBO, led by Aaron Sorkin of Social Network and West Wing fame, tentatively titled More As This Story Develops. He's landed Jeff Daniels to play the lead, cable news anchor Will McAllister, but there's also three ladies vying for potential big roles in the cast. Leading that pack is Marissa Tomei, who's close to signing on as the show's female lead, workaholic executive producer Mackenzie. Behind her are other supportive roles, possibly to be taken by Olivia Munn, who just got booted off Perfect Couples, canceled on NBC, and Allison Pill, a.k.a. the drummer from Scott Pilgrim versus the World's Sex Bob-omb.
Okay.
So those are your three. First one is a recap. Showtime, Kristen Bell, PR firm. Two, Evan Rachel Wood, Starz, Starlet on the Downhill Decline, or Aaron Sorkin, HBO cable news drama.
All right. Well, I know number one is true, I believe. Produced by the same guy who made Veronica Mars, correct?
You are correct. Ba-bam.
Hooray. The next ones, I haven't heard anything about the second one. The third one, I know Olivia Munn was just recently back in the news. I know Aaron Sorkin had something going on. And maybe it was with HBO. And Mackenzie is a girl's name that most Mackenzies are hot. So I'm going to say three is also... But Jeff Daniels and Marissa Tomei, those are big names. I'll say three is true and two is the lie.
Oh, you got it, doctor.
Good yeah.
Work. That is right. Unfortunately, there's no Lindsay Lohan meta commentary dramedy coming up on Starz. Though... You never know. Maybe they'll hear this podcast and think differently.
I know. I'm thinking differently.
Yeah. So what do you think about the two shows that actually are happening? I think we are both Veronica Mars fans. That's correct?
Correct. A long time ago, we used to be friends, but Kristen Bell fan and Party Down.
Yeah.
Rob Thomas, right?
Also from Rob Thomas. This one, I think the difference is, though, while... Rob Thomas is involved. The main showrunner is going to be Matthew Carnahan, whose only pre-TV credit is Dirt from FX with Courtney Cox.
I haven't seen it.
I've never seen more than a few minutes of it, but it failed pretty miserably. I think a lot of that may have had to do with that FX is generally a male audience, and so it was kind of hard to push a female protagonist show on them.
The show that had like stars all over its wording and everything?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and it was similar kind of plot. I think Courtney Cox, not just a PR firm, but specifically like a celebrity agent.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I have more faith in Belle as a dramatic actress than Courtney Cox. So I think this has potential, but I don't know. What do you think?
I will watch it, if only for Kristen Bell. And did you say anyone else was attached to it?
Don Cheadle.
Oh, yeah, and Don Cheadle. I've liked him in most things I can think of.
Yeah, he's one of those actors that, like, I like him in things, but I never think of him when I think of, like, good actors.
Right.
Which is too bad. But maybe this would be good. Maybe he's better on the small screen than the big screen.
Have you ever been on the small screen?
I don't know if he ever has.
Maybe he's too big for it.
Maybe. Well, I think that's an interesting point, what you were saying about the Sorkin show that's in development with Jeff Daniels and Marissa Tomei. That seems kind of extreme for a TV show. Like,
yeah, when was the last time either of them were on TV?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, Kristen Bell, she became famous on TV, even though now she's in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's going back, kind of, but I don't remember Jeff Daniels or Marissa Tomei ever being on TV.
That seems to be the trend now, is that the bigger stars, I mean, you have Dustin Hoffman on this upcoming show, Luck, for HBO as well. From David Milch of Deadwood, and I think it's becoming a trend. People are starting to, for whatever reason, respect TV more, if it's because of the Mad Men's and the Wires of the world, but the bigger stars are not looking at it as, you know, oh, I have to be on a sitcom if I want to be on TV kind of thing.
Right.
All right, you want to go?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Are you prepared?
Yeah. Tell me your two truths and a lie TV shows in development.
Okay. First up is a show called Big Mike. It's going to be on A&E. And here's the description. Big Mike is a plus-size detective in a world where plus-sized is a minus. He is a force of nature in the San Diego PD, and his coworkers know not to underestimate him. He also knows all the best places to eat, a benefit when you're patrolling for hours on an empty stomach. It's going to be produced by Happy Madison Productions, and it will not be starring, but it will include one of your favorites, Heroes alum, Greg Grunberg.
Oh, boy.
All right. Second up is called Bent, B-E-N-T. It's going to be on NBC, single-camera sitcom, briefly described as a romantic comedy about a recently divorced single mother who tries hard not to fall for the sexy surfer dude contractor she hires to redo her kitchen. A bunch of stars attached to this one, including Jeffrey Tambor, Amanda Peet, who you may remember I once had a piece of paper from her movie performance in A Lot Like Love given to me by a coworker who worked on that movie. And I tried... That was the movie starring her and Ashton Kutcher. I tried to give it away as a prize for a year, including on our blogging awards we had in someone's basement, and no one wanted it. So I think it's in the trash now. And it also includes Margot Harshman, a.k.a. Tawny from Even Stevens, whose name, character name in the show is Scroozy. All right. And the last show...
Wow. Okay.
The last show is called Calorie High. It's going to be on ABC Family. Description is, a single mother of teens is eliminated early from a weight loss show, after which she returns home and angrily hops on her treadmill with a plate of donuts. She falls and suffers a concussion that, combined with a sugar rush, psychologically reverts her to the age of her kids, with whom she then attends school and learns the value of establishing a healthy lifestyle while young. Through a number of extracurricular activities, including ... question mark. Sounds like a ripoff of Strangers with Candy with Amy Sedaris and Nadine from Twin Peaks.
And it sounds
also,
like, was the alternate title Fatty Friday?
I hope so.
My God.
Not any actors attached to that name, but it is mentioned that the pilot episode is going to feature the premiere of a new song by Switchfoot.
Oh, good.
All right, so those are my three.
Oh, my God. I'm pretty sure you made them all up.
Nope, I only made up one of them.
That's ridiculous.
I only looked in a couple of letters of the list of the B's and C's of all the shows in development, and this is the gold I got.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. So the first one.
Brief review. Yeah. First one, Big Mike,
Big
plus
Mike.
Size detective, A&E. Great. Second one, Bent, NBC, single camera comedy, sexy surfer dude. Third one, Calorie High, ABC Family, mother who... goes to high school with her kids.
And learns nutritional facts along the way.
Correct.
I imagine that one. Did you ever watch the Sonic cartoon as a kid? Sonic the Hedgehog?
No, I did not watch it. I was a Nintendo fanboy at that time.
Okay. A lot of cartoons did this, but they'd always, like, the bumpers before and after the commercials would give you, like, a fun fact or something that you should know.
Right.
About, you know, being healthy or...
Like, don't actually eat gold rings like Sonic.
Right, exactly. It was general rules. I'm pretty sure that this Calorie High show, if it's real, that they should do that before and after commercials.
Definitely. They should have Switchfoot do it.
That'd be great. Switchfoot presents Healthy Tip. Hey, guys. Just so you know, if you bring a donut on the treadmill, you better stay on twice as long, because that donut's not going to burn off itself easily.
That's great advice, Switchfoot.
Okay, so I'm going to say that one's actually real because I think that the fact that you pointed out that there is no cast, but they have already landed Switchfoot, not to appear as actors, but just to premiere their next song, that's pretty hard to make up. Am I right?
All right. I'm not going to say until you give me the other two answers.
Okay, so I think Big Mike is the fake one. Because a Bent, the surfer guy one, I think that's pretty standard fare for NBC trying manically to throw something into the lineup that's a single camera sitcom, but doesn't really have any well-established personality or anything intriguing behind it. I think they've got a three good comedy limit, and they've already made it with 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, and Community. So, and those ones are going away. So I think that one's true. So I think Big Mike is fake because Greg Grunberg.
You're the one who loves him.
I do. No. Yeah. Yeah, I do.
I thought it was you.
I do. I think I've liked him less and less because my wife, Jerksica, who appeared on the program last week and will again this week, has such a crush on him.
Mm.
And
Seth Rogen.
She has a crush on so many fatties.
Fatties with hard G's in their last name.
Exactly. I think that one's fake because I think he's the kind of guy that's so smug that he wouldn't want to typecast himself again as a cop.
Well, he's not that. He wouldn't be the Big Mike. He would be another character.
But another cop?
Possibly. I don't know.
Oh, okay. So that's ambiguous. I'm going to go out on a limb. I say Big Mike's fake.
All right. You are correct that Bent is real.
Uh-huh.
However,
oh my god,
Calorie High is fake. I made that one up.
Oh
Big
no,
Mike is real. Happy Madison Productions. Greg Grunberg.
Oh, you know, I heard you say Happy Madison Productions, and I should have realized that that meant that it was true.
Yeah, I was wondering whether to say that or not. I thought you might have.
You got me good with the Switchfoot thing, though.
Yeah,
good work, Doctor. Wow, I'm stunned. I'm speechless. I'm gonna go home. I am home.
I am too. So we'll just go our separate ways.
That's fine. You beat me. Well, let's keep a tally board. Doctor 1, Chris 0 for Tooth, Truth, and a Lie, TV shows in development edition.
I'm excited. And I might write the pilot for Calorie High now.
Oh, yeah. ABC Family would eat that up, especially since Huge got canceled last summer.
Oh, yeah. I just got to get Switchfoot.
Yeah, they're on board. They already told me.
Okay, sweet.
I texted them while you were talking to me.
Yes.
It's like, hey guys, heard you got a song in a pilot. Congrats.
Can't wait.
So thank you, Doctor, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Blogulator Radio. Doctor, I'm sure will join us again soon on the netcast. Find us at theblogulator.com. Both articles by myself and Dr. Peace. Check me back in just a little bit when I'll go through some reality competitive TV shows, non-weight loss category, with my wife, Jerksica. Thanks again, Doctor. Have a good one.
You too.
Once again, this is Blogulator Radio. My name is Chris. I'm here for the second segment of this week's episode with my wife, Jerksica. How are you, Jerksica?
Word.
You might remember 2 weeks ago, she joined the podcast despite not being an official staff writer for theblogulator.com, on which you can get more information on all things pop culture with our own little skewed view. But she's joining us because, she's the only one that watches reality television with me.
Nepotism, too. Yeah. At work.
Basically nepotism is what it all boils down to. We're here specifically tonight to discuss two reality shows, one in its infancy and one coming to a close and quite possibly never to return again. So let's first talk about the one that's going away soon. It's a season/series finale is this Sunday evening on NBC. It's America's Next Great Restaurant, and I guess, Jerksica, could you explain a little why we are so obsessed with this particular horrible reality show?
Welcome, everybody, to America's Next Great Restaurant.
Well, I think it combines everything that we love about reality shows with our favorite activity, which is eating. It's, you know, basically just deciding who's going to have three restaurants across the country, one in our very own hometown of Minneapolis here. And you get to see people's failures, just like on any other reality show. But it's combined with delicious and hopefully not nutritious food.
Yeah, that's been a slant as of late when all of a sudden the judges/hosts, which include Bobby Flay and Curtis Stone,
suddenly say, oh, by the way, your food should be healthy, even though two of the top three are arguably absolutely not healthy at all. And even the third one is kind of selling out to the unhealthy staple of American diets. So let's talk a little bit about the three restaurant concepts that are left that will be vying for the ultimate prize of basically starting their own franchise on what seems to be no more than blind luck and maybe a couple of decent recipes passed down through family tradition. We had the first,
or whatever Steve Ells tells them to make.
Right, or whatever Steve Ells, the founder of Chipotle, who's one of the judges and hosts, kind of frantically screams at you with his wild dinosaur eyes and makes you believe is the only answer to ever creating anything possibly special in this world that could even ever possibly match up to the awesomeness that is Chipotle.
Well, I think you have a very skewed understanding of who Steve Ells is and what his persona is, because you think that he's like this badass behind the scenes.
No,
that he strong arms all the other judges into making the decision he wants. Like he's the Don of the judge mafia of Next Great American Restaurant.
I do think that out of all the judges, when we see behind the scenes of them actually making their decision, because of course they do the fancy editing to make us not know what exactly they're going to do and who they're going to kick off. But I think there's a big reason why Sudhir, the owner or the creator of Spice Coast, one of the final three options, which is an Indian fusion fast casual restaurant, which I didn't think would ever exist, and I still don't think will ever exist after this show, but he's been such a proponent of him only because Sudhir has decided to translate the Indian fare, you know, cauliflower, chickpeas, spices, galore, etc., into the taco format. And when he did that, Steve Ells, I think, almost made love with him right there on the show. And when they went behind the scenes to kick somebody off last week, it seemed like everybody was going to go for Sudhir, especially because Curtis Stone and Bobby Flay were on their health kick, and Stephanie, whose health food restaurant Harvest Soul was eventually kicked off. I think they weren't going to kick her off because they still liked that concept, but Sudhir ultimately prevailed because I think Steve Ells very much convinced them persuasively. Not even persuasively, just with this. I swear, his eyes freak me out in particular, and I think he's got a very strange way of pulling along all these other judges that may seem to be just be there because they have the money, and why the hell not, right?
They all seem crazy, though. You know, like I think there's a very standard, amalgamation of judge personalities on your standard reality show, and there's like none of the three judges on this show are like the positive one or the reasonable one or the super critical one. They're all like just nuts.
Yeah, they don't make any sense.
Because you had Steve Ells, who wants everything to be a taco, and then you had Curtis going on a rampage week to week about, you know, wanting everything to be a sandwich. And then you have, who's the other judge?
Lorena Garcia.
And that's all she does is say her name, like she's really proud of her name, repeatedly. Like, right. She never says anything.
But we have
else.
No idea where she's from or what she's famous for. She just says, hello, everybody, I'm Lorena Garcia, I'm a restaurateur.
Yeah, like, sometimes she doesn't even say that. Sometimes she just says, I'm Lorena Garcia, right. And then waits for applause. Crazy.
And Bobby Flay, of course, which I think he in particular, being the, I guess if there had to be an MC for the show, it's kind of strange because there's no Ryan Seacrest of America's Next Great Restaurant. It's Bobby Flay hosting, MCing, and then also judging. And every day he has a different idea that he wants one of the owners or creators to come up with and implement into their restaurant. But if they do, then he tells them they did it wrong. But if they don't, then it'll be a crapshoot. He'll either say, I applaud you for standing up for yourself, or why didn't you listen to me? And there's absolutely no rhyme or reason which way he'll go, so he's completely unpredictable. As are all of them. It's like they're all Simon Cowell's minus logic.
Yeah, they all have mental health issues, I'm pretty sure. But we should get to the restaurants.
Yeah, so obviously Spice Coast is probably the least likely, I think, of the three to win, though I certainly would go there. I mean, I think the Indian taco is an absurd idea, but I'm sure it's delicious. Mm-hmm. The other three include Soul Daddy, which is your soul food restaurant, which I think has the most likable protagonist of the three.
Jaman.
He's had a tough life. He's got a family to support. You know, your general sob story. And he sobs literally when he's on the stand, or he comes to the investor's suite.
And he's from Detroit, the saddest city in the United States.
Exactly. So how can you not sympathize with this guy? Plus, his food does look really good. Chicken and waffles, bacon-infused pancakes and waffles. But my favorite part about this guy is this last episode when all of a sudden the judges started saying, make your food healthy, which is ridiculous. You're trying to say that to a soul food person. But he actually like went on the internet and like Googled African-American cuisine and figured out how to make soul food healthy.
Like that made the edit, him right. Googling African-American cuisine.
Exactly. And it's actually really sweet. I mean, it's a kind of ridiculous thing that he did that and that he's pandering to these judges so much. But I guess, you know, he has to if he wants to win this competition. And he seems the only one that doesn't seem stuck up. Sadir seems stuck up, has an ego. He's also the only one that doesn't seem totally like an idiot, like Joey, who's the creator of the third restaurant that really doesn't make any sense how he's made it to the finale either. It's a marketable concept, and that's probably the only reason it has. It's the Brooklyn Meatball Company. And it's astounding to think about the possibility of this guy owning a restaurant that could potentially be marketable and successful because who doesn't like meatballs, Italian food?
Because we're fat and yeah. We like balls of meat.
Right. And Sunday sauce. And so we're going to eventually get that, I think. But Jamon could give him a good run for the money if only because he's seems genuine and down to earth. And sometimes, you know, we got to admit, at some times these reality competitions, the best guy does win. What do you think? You think Joey or Jamon?
I think it will be Joey, but I appreciate your positivity and your optimism. Going solely on a food concept, though, like if I had to go to one of those three restaurants tomorrow, I want Sadir to win.
I'd agree with that. I think while Jamon's food looks good, I'd be more interested and probably more likely to go more often to a fast Indian restaurant. I think that the biggest obstacle that seems to be in their way is that, well, I think I'm getting the idea that the best guy will win. Because Next Great American Restaurant reminds me a lot of what I think is, to date, my favorite reality competition show, and it might be yours too, which aired and premiered last summer and soon to have its second season, Work of Art,
on
Bravo. And it kind of mirrors that structure of that show in which there's a lot of creative loopholes that the contestants have to go through that make it the genuine, classy, slash trashy reality show, but at the same time, it's got a different slant to it and actually does make it genuinely interesting to watch. However, I think NBC has screwed this concept so wholly that they're never going to do it again, and I can't imagine that whatever they end up investing in will be too successful that would merit them doing another one. And so in that case, I think that you might be right, Joey might win, but I'm still going to be optimistic. I'm going to say that Jamon wins it all on this Sunday's premiere, in which they actually build their own model prototype restaurants we actually get to see for the first time, which is basically what we've seen every episode for the past 10 mm-hmm. weeks. But at the same time, for some reason, they do one little tweak, and I still want to see it because of the ridiculousness of it. And, I mean, you can't beat a competitive reality show that also has what looks to be delicious food, even if it's just a meatball and Sunday sauce.
There you have it.
There you have it.
Score one for hopes and dreams.
Let's go for it. We'll see who's right Sunday night. The other one we want to talk about tonight before we go is the premiere of NBC's other new reality competition show, which is The Voice. So we've got...
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Okay, that's your opinion.
It's amazing.
It's your opinion. We've got an updated look at the American Idol type show, but with the most ridiculous, and this has been said on all the blogs, but I'll have to repeat it here, most inanely complex rules for a music show.
What's exciting about The Voice is that when you have the best in the business looking for the next best, and they're not willing to just go, you suck, you're great, good luck out there, kids, and we're carving out some time to help you. Here are our producers, here's our people. You don't find that anywhere else.
I love it. It's like a game I would have made up as a child. You know,
that's
like when
point.
You have all the neighbor kids over and you guys like play Spud or you play like statue tag and you like make up your own rules. And it would seriously take like a half an hour to mm-hmm. figure out who was in charge and what the rules were and what the exceptions were. And then you'd play for 2 minutes and be done with it.
Yeah. And once
but
you
I
start
that.
And once you start playing, you still don't know what the rules are. And they eventually morph and change to well, be
whoever,
something completely different
right.
from what you knew in the beginning.
Whoever's the most confident about being bossy about what the rules are. gets to decide.
So how can we explain this for people at home if you have, for some reason, managed to avoid the incessant commercials on NBC every 2 minutes?
There's a panel of judges, per huge, all celebrity musicians. Ex-Tina Aguilera is a part of it, along with your favorite, CeeLo.
CeeLo Green, formerly of Goody Mob and now of Gnarls Barkley.
Yes, some cowboy guy.
Blake Shelton.
Yes.
Who I also, same as you, don't listen to country, so I had no idea who he was. But some of my students, I'm a teacher, and at some of my students at school are specifically excited for the show because the great country star Blake Shelton, apparently Grammy nominated, apparently very huge, but I don't know a single one of his songs.
Yeah.
Apparently actually is famous.
Well, I'm disgruntled and pretty pretentious, but I'm not so pretentious that I pretend like I haven't heard country songs that have, like, been in, you know, like, on the charts or they play, like, on the radio or
to
crossover.
Be honest, who do you know that's a famous country artist right now besides Lady Antebellum?
Yeah, no, that's true.
I don't know. It's amazing, but apparently he's big, and actually I think he's one of the more entertaining people, one of the more entertaining judges. I'm a big CeeLo guy, but he hasn't seemed to be as crazy as I'd hoped he'd be outside of his outfits, which is too bad. But actually, my favorite judge is the one that you haven't mentioned yet.
Yes.
Mr. Adam Levine of Maroon 5.
Who?
I'm
kidding.
Yeah. Not only does he have such a manic sensibility to him that he's the perfect kind of person you'd want to judge a competitive reality show, he has the complete lack of logic that the America's Next Great Restaurant judges have, but he also actually is magnetizing to watch, I think, in his craziness and his ability to start fights, his ability to go on rampages that really don't make any sense, kind of like the Steven Tyler on American Idol, but except he actually has things to say. And I actually enjoyed watching and hearing what he had to say about the people that
I disagree completely. He's like the 30-year-old frat guy or that like continues to live in the frat house way past like dropping out of college, you know, and is like super into making sure everybody gets really drunk and there are hot girls there, but nobody really likes him, but they buy everybody all the underagers.
Oh yeah, that's why I love him.
But
he's the guy that nobody likes,
right?
But
he couldn't even get any of the contestants to join him on his team.
Yes, he was the last person. Okay, we should probably explain what these judges.
Yes.
And because they're not even technically judges, they're coaches.
Yeah.
Even though I'm pretty sure
we'll see.
Host Carson Daly calls them both judges and coaches throughout the program, even though the narration consistently reminds us that they are not judges, they are coaches. So there's four coaches. They all are in red swivel chairs, and their backs facing the singer who's on stage. And these singers come on stage, and they have to pick one of these coaches to be their mentor and whose team they want to join. But they can't pick that coach until they press their button after hearing their voice, not judging based on appearance, looks, whatever. That's the BS gimmick that they want us to feed into.
But everybody was hot. Like,
oh, yeah. Nobody was downright ugly.
I mean, yeah. You didn't have any, like...
And actually, the one or two that were didn't get picked at all by any of the four.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unfortunate that sometimes the stereotype does prevail, especially in the case of one of the particular contestants we saw on the series premiere, in which she was dealing with the turmoil of, do people like me because I'm beautiful or because I can actually sing? And, of course, she could sing fine, nothing great, but because she sang okay, two of the four judges turned around, and that validated her, and she felt okay that she was beautiful and could still be picked for a reality competition show just on the basis of her talent.
You're kind of sensitive about this. Are you,
I am.
You need a little confidence boost there, buddy?
So, okay, this ties into actually why...
I'm here because she's beautiful.
I can hate people whoever I want, especially if they're on television. This ties into, though, why I like Adam Levine. Because Adam Levine is a guy that nobody likes, but he'll jump into any conversation he possibly can. He'll jump into any conflict that he possibly can just for the sake of entertainment value. And I think that is basically what Maroon 5 is all about. They're an absolutely horrid band. He has an absolutely treacherous voice, so nasally that it can be hurtful on some of their singles. But I think that he has come to the point where he's aware of that, and now he's just having fun. And I think he's fucking with us all the way through this.
I don't think he has any self-awareness.
You don't think he's smart enough for that?
No. No.
We'll see.
And I don't think you would like a person like him in any other context other than as
that's
the coach slash judge.
That's true.
Cudge.
The cudge.
Joach.
Let's call him Joaches.
Joaches. Okay.
Here's the trick about the voice, though. We've only seen for one episode, and we know that they're going to continue picking their teams, and so each coach will end up with a team of eight that they have to mentor and cultivate into artist personas or whatever. But what the hell happens after that?
Mm-hmm. I think the whole show has daddy issues. This is my whole theory about The Voice, which is why I find it so fantastic.
Tell listeners about Blake Shelton and the 16-year-old girl.
Well, this feeds into it, right? I mean, every reality show has its one judge that's like the pervy one, but it's a lot more than that. I feel like the whole premise of the show, in a way, is like very paternalistic, has daddy issues, right? So this show, unlike American Idol, is less about like finding the next great singer and more about like these joaches swooping in and like helping these like poor singers who are really good, but they just need a little joaching, and they just, you know, if we can just shine them up a bit and we can help them, we can condescend to mentor them, maybe they'll be able to make it in the business. And then that just to me is dovetailed against these very specific instances in the first episode where those daddy issues are made even more abundantly clear. For example, the issue you brought up where there was a 16-year-old girl who sang and both Blake Shelton and Adam Levine wanted her on her team, as well as and CeeLo. And she was trying to decide who she was going to pick as her joach. And Blake Shelton was saying, oh no, don't pick CeeLo because, you know, you're a young, impressionable girl and you need consistency and guidance in your life.
Stability.
And CeeLo's going to show up one day dressed like Batman, right? Which to me is actually like a really weird example because of all like weird people that CeeLo could come dressed up as, like Batman's like the most helpful,
yeah.
You know, like if you're falling through the air, like he's going to catch you. If you're being robbed, he's going to be there. But anyway, so Blake Shelton basically told this girl, like, choose me, I'll be the daddy you never had. And then they had, like, this really, really awkward hug, right?
Mm-hmm. How
so that's part of it. But then I also think Carson Daly feeds into this whole, like, daddy issues piece too, right? Because his role as, like, the Seacrest on the show is, like, talking to all of the families that are sitting there watching, you know, their kids. And the one girl you mentioned who was like, oh, I don't want to be just the beautiful singer anymore. I want to be the singer who just happens to be beautiful. Talking to her about her YouTube videos that she's posted prior to the competition. And Carson Daly is like, well, you have friends from all over the world from that now? And she's like, yeah, everybody Facebook friends me. And he was like, has this little like wink wink conversation with her dad where he's like, hey dad, you better watch out. Like, and this girl's like, what, 24?
So, yeah.
Like, old enough where it's really, really verging on creeptastic. So I think when you have the Seacrest of the show kind of feeding into the whole daddy issue premise that everything's based on, I'm so excited for more. It's going to be great.
There's endless possibilities, and while we have no idea where it's going to go, I mean, it's probably going to just go to the straight, knock them down one at a time, eliminate them. When that's a whole other issue that I think is weird. If the joaches are in charge of both making the artist better and then also kicking them off, that's a little strange, I think.
Well, and then the contestants are competing against each other, but then the joaches are also competing to pick the contestant that's going to win the competition.
Right. So there's going to be a winner singer, and there's also going to be a winner joach. But ultimately, do we care about any of them?
The competitors?
No.
The joaches?
Yes.
I don't care about anyone, so I guess I should just say no.
Yeah,
you
just say no. No, no matter what. Because, I mean, I don't care what joach picks The Voice.
Well, no. But, I don't. This is way too complicated.
It is.
Is there like an algorithm you?
If you call 1-800-NBC blow me, they'll send you a manual that you can read along with as you watch the 2-hour extravaganza.
Well, in any case, I'm going to bring my vulnerability and my inner childhood pain to every episode from here on out because I'm excited.
I plan to as well. Even though while American Idol's winding down, it's going to feel like a little bit of a double teaming from the singing competition reality show. That sounded wrong. I apologize. But that is what it feels like. Well,
you just need a father figure to come and teach you the real ways of competition.
Maybe I'll call up Adam Levine.
All right. It's good.
Thank you, Jerkska, for joining me on this week's edition of Blogulator Radio.
You are welcome.
We'll be sure to come back next week with a back to the original threesome of, that sounded wrong as well, of Bridget Qualler and myself doing a roundtable discussion. But until next time.
Roundtable discussion.
Everything sounds dirty now. Until next time, this has been Blogulator Radio. Bringing you the best and worst in television discussion. Jessica, last week, last week, I was remiss to teach you the Blogulator Radio catchphrase and have you say it along with me to close out the show. So can you do that with me tonight?
NBC blow me.
Close.
Oh.
It goes a little like this. My opinions are valid. Ready? On the count of three. One, two, three.
Because your opinions aren't
your
valid.
Opinions. Oh. You say my. We say
right,
it together.
Right. Your opinions aren't valid. Is that what
opinions.
I say? Your opinions
no,
are not valid.
No, you say my opinions.
My opinions are valid. Your opinions are not valid.
You're going to say that to me?
That's, isn't that?
No.
Oh.
We can both because my opinions are valid. Thanks for listening to Blogulator Radio on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Network.